tuning in to the Next Level Church podcast. For more information, check out our website at nextlevelchurch.net.
One thing that I am convinced that all of us want to know is how to remain happy in relationships. I think it's something that's on our mind, and it's something that we often think about. And the reason that I think this is that I've done 55 weddings, and for every wedding that I do, I require premarital counseling. And in the premarital counseling, one of the questions that is asked is, what are you most afraid of about your upcoming marriage? And almost every time, the couple will say either, I'm afraid that I will not remain happy, or I'm afraid that they won't remain happy with me. This fear of being happy, it's a real fear. It's a common fear. It is something that we often wonder about. Like, if I get into a marriage and that's supposed to be for life, am I going to stay happy with them for years to come? It's a thought that we often have even with our kids. Like, we want to have kids and then you have them and it's like, oh, this is a bundle of joy. But then they hit two and you're like, you're demon possessed. I'm no longer happy with you. Happiness is a fleeting thing that we are often chasing and we're trying to hold on to it, but it's like trying to hold on to water. It is just simply just slipping through our fingertips. And today, I'm convinced that one of the main issues in our happiness is that we put happiness on another person. That we think that our happiness comes from what they do or how they treat us or what they say to us. And as long as happiness is put on someone else, you will be forever chasing happiness. Because that is too much pressure to put on any human being. To ask one person to meet all of your needs and to do things just the way that you would do them so that you can remain happy is impossible. No human being can meet every one of your needs. No human being is going to do exactly what you want to do and how you want to do it every single time. The very fact that you are in relationship means that you're going to have to put forth some work because your happiness will be fleeting. It leaves. When the newness wears off, you have to fight for your relationship. And today, we're continuing our series entitled The Elephants in the Family Room. And our text for today, it's going to drive our conversation. It's something that Jesus said, and I want us to pay careful attention to it. At Next Level, one of the things that we do is we try to honor the text, and we show honor the text by standing to our feet. And so I want to invite all of you to stand to your feet and read with me. These are Jesus' words to us. Jesus said, "Very truly, I tell you, no servant is greater than his master, nor is the messenger greater than the one who sent him. Now that you know these things, you will be blessed if you do them." Now that we've read the text, let's go to God in prayer. Would you just close your eyes, bow your heads? God, we come before you right now, and we just admit that every single one of us needs some help in relationships. And God, right now, we're coming in, and some of us had a hard time sleeping last night because of broken relationships. And some of us have a hard time even being here because our hearts are heavy. And God, I just ask that you would just soften our hearts so that we could hear clearly from you. And God, once we hear from you, would you give us the courage to obey you no matter how hard it is? God, I just ask that the words of my mouth and the meditation of my heart will be acceptable in your sight. Lord, you are my rock and my redeemer. In Jesus' name, amen. You may be seated. I'll make a little confession to you. If you've been around Next Level for any amount of time, then this isn't a surprise to you. I stink at all things mechanical. It is not my giftedness. I am not good at construction. I am not good at putting things together. It's not in my wiring. In fact, my wife will often say when it comes to assembling things that I'm gifted at other things. I have other gifts that make me special and unique, but putting stuff together is not one of them. I struggle massively with it. And those of you that are mechanical, you don't understand it because it just comes so easy to you. And you look at me and you're like, it's not that hard. But it is that hard for me. I make the easiest task difficult when I try to do it on my own. Last year, I had a brake light out in my Honda Civic. And the reason I knew I had a brake light out is because we have a police officer that goes to our church. And he stopped me in the church parking lot and he rolled down his window and he let me know that he could give me a ticket for not having this brake light. And so I thought he was joking, so I said, oh yeah, I'll take care of it, and then totally forgot about the brake light, until the very next Sunday when he followed me from the church to my gym, and in the gym parking lot, he told me how serious he was, but he really could give me a ticket for not replacing this brake light, and I really needed to go get it taken care of. So I left the gym, and after the gym, I went to AutoZone, and I got a brake light for my Honda Civic. Now, this is easy for some of you. Some of you, you grew up changing these things. You know how to work around a car. I literally have difficulty changing the windshield wipers on my car. This is not in my skill set. And so I open up my trunk because I know the brakes at least in the back. And so I open the trunk and I'm looking back there. And I don't see a spot to open or unscrew the back to get to the light. And so I go to YouTube. Thank God for YouTube. I found a video on how to change a light bulb in a Honda Civic. And I watched the video twice in order to understand exactly how to get. The problem was is that there was carpet that was covering the back of where the light was. And I was nervous if I pulled it down, I was going to rip something. But this is just the way that 2004 Honda Civics were made. So I had to pull it down. And then you screw off the two latches and pull off the back. And then I can see inside and I see the brake lights. And so I then replace a bulb. But at this point, I need some help to see if the bulb is actually working. Because I don't trust myself. And so I'm not just going to get back on the road. I need someone to hit the brake so that I can see that the light comes on. And so I go into my house and I see my 7-year-old nephew, Connor. And I say, hey, Connor, would you come out here and hit the brake to my car? And I said, you don't have to be nervous about anything. The car's not on. If you accidentally hit the gas, it's not going to go anywhere. I just need you to hit this brake so I can see if the brake light works. Connor comes out. He gets in the car. He hits the brake. Nothing. I'm really frustrated at myself because I'm like, I don't know how I messed this up. It's so easy. You take a bulb out. You put a bulb in. Why isn't this working? And so I sat there. I pondered it for a while. I watched the YouTube video again. I prayed to the God of heaven that he would give me wisdom on this stupid light bulb. It finally dawned on me that what I had done is in the back there are two light bulbs. I had two brake lights, and I had replaced the bulb that worked and left the bulb that did not work in there. And so when he hit the brake, the bulb came on, but the one that I was supposed to replace, it didn't come on. And so once I realized that, I said, okay, this is an easy fix. Now I just need to take out the actual bulb that is not working and replace it with this new bulb. And so I go to take the old bulb out, and it shatters in my fingertips. And the glass goes everywhere, and my fingers are bleeding, and blood is dripping everywhere. And I'm like, curse you! Ah, I'm so mad. I've made something so easy, so difficult. A little while later, my brother comes to pick up his son, my nephew. And my brother's way more mechanical than I am. And I said, hey, John, would you mind replacing this brake light? He walked right out, and in 2 minutes, and without watching a YouTube video, he replaced the brake light. It was amazing, and it was so simple for him. And I just looked at it, and I was like, I don't know how that's so easy. I make the easiest things complex, and the easiest things end up harming me because I'm just not good at it. And I'm convinced that relationships are a lot like that brake light story. They take some work. Very often we wish that a relationship was easy, but we make the easiest thing in relationships complex. And we go to mess with them ourselves, and we think we can fix it, and we think that we're good enough, but then we end up a little bloodied, a little bruised. And our response every time is, I just give up. But if there was someone that we could ask for a little bit of help, they would give us some insight into the easiest issues in our life. But pride steps in, and pride tells us that we are not to talk about our issues in our family, that we don't need to ask anyone for help, that we can solve our own family problems. But the problem is that we, when you're in the relationship, it is too difficult to fix these things. And we all have our own issues, we all have our own problems. And often what happens is the problems in relationships do not get addressed. They just get ignored. And we hope that they'll go away one day, and we hope that they'll solve themselves, but they just don't. And if we would just humble ourselves to ask someone for a little bit of help, they could come in and help give us direction and fix the problem way more easier than when we try to deal with it ourselves. Those issues that we don't talk about, those issues that we don't deal with, those are the elephants in the family room. And there are elephants in every single one of our families that are plaguing us. There are elephants in every single one of our families that we wish would go away. We hope over time they will be healed, but they just seem to hang out and stick around there. And what we're doing in this series is we're addressing some of the elephants in the room, and we're talking about them. And at times it's a little uncomfortable because we don't like to talk about these things. We wish we could just pretend and just be great at relationships, but all of us need a little bit of coaching when it comes to relationships. Today, I want to give you the big idea right up front. If you're taking notes, you can write this down. Simply this: we view happiness as something others give us. But true happiness is not something you can take, it's something you make. We view happiness as something others give us, but true happiness is not something you can take, it's something that you make. And I want to break down the words that we read just a few moments ago from Jesus. This is where we get this big idea from. And I want to just give you just a little bit of a hint of where we're going. What Jesus says literally has the power to radically transform your relationships. But you cannot just sit here passively and just say, okay, I'm just going to kind of take this in and maybe this is good. He literally is giving us a secret that will radically transform every relationship in your life. But you've got to pay attention and you've got to take notes and you've got to think about the part that you play in your relationship. If you listen to this sermon or in this series through the lens of, I hope my spouse hears this, I hope my kids hear this, I hope someone else hears this, it's not going to change your life. The way that life change happens is when you internalize it and say, what can I do with this? And if you're here today and you are single, I think this is a great sermon for you to hear. If you're single and you're ready to mingle, do not wait until you're married to start working on your marriage. Work on it now. Don't wait until you're a parent to discover how to be a great parent. Start working on it now. If you're married, I think this is a great topic for you because very often in marriage, our happiness is dictated on how the other person treats us. And Jesus is going to give us some insight that says, listen, that's not the way true happiness comes. If you're here today and maybe you're a parent, oftentimes your happiness is dependent on how your kids behave. And when they listen and they obey, you feel happy. But when they disobey, it causes all sorts of turmoil inside of you. And Jesus is going to speak into those relationships that if you're basing your happiness on your kids' behavior, you're going to be chasing something and never achieving it. I want to break down the words that Jesus said to us. Jesus said, we're going to start in John 13:17. He said, now that you know these things, you will be blessed if you do them. Now, if you grew up going to church, there's a great chance that you had a pastor who had a preacher voice. I went to seminary, but they didn't teach me how to have the preacher voice, so I just talked to you like I talk to anyone. But in the churches I grew up in, pastors had a preacher's voice. And when they would get to words like blessed, they wouldn't say blessed, they would say blessed. And it's very preachery. Like it sounds like, oh man, that guy knows what he's talking about. And so maybe you've never talked like a preacher, but I'm going to give you an opportunity. Would you look at the person sitting next to you, and would you put on your best preacher voice? Would you just say, blessed. There you go. Man, some of you got some preacher in you. You might have missed your calling. Blessed. Now, Jesus says, all right, your preaching time's done. All right. Some of you went on to preach a whole sermon on that one. Jesus says specifically, you will be blessed if you do these things. Now, one of the things that will unlock Scripture for you is if you have a holy curiosity. And if you just go to Scripture and you just read it at face value, it's never going to unlock the true meaning behind it. A holy curiosity starts to ask some questions. And some of the questions that you need to ask is, who said this? Why did they say this? And what was the original intent of what they said? And one of the things that's a little bit confusing is that the Bible was not originally written in English. The New Testament, this is where Jesus would have spoke this, it was written in Greek. And so English has done, we've done the best we can to translate the Greek words into English, but oftentimes there is not a word that fully represents the word that would have been used. And in this case, when Jesus said blessed, he didn't say blessed like we think of the word blessed. He actually said the word makarios. Would you, on the count of three, would you just say out loud makarios? One, two, three. Makarios. Makarios, the Greek word, it literally means truly happy. So a better translation of this is if you do the things that Jesus says, you will become truly happy. But it's not a happiness that is fleeting on how other people treat you. It is a happiness that realizes just how good you have it despite your circumstances. Now this word makarios, it came to be because in the Greek culture, they believed in multiple gods. And the gods in the Greek culture were very much like our superheroes today. If you like the Marvel movies that are coming out in theaters, they represent basically the Greek gods. That they have all these amazing superpowers, they do all these great things. And in the Greek culture, makarios was this idea that we as humans, we have it rough. It is difficult to live on this earth, but there's these gods up in the heavens, and they achieve makarios. They have true happiness. They don't deal with problems. They have all the money in the world. They have all the fame. They have everything that they need. They have makarios. And it came in their culture to start to relate to people that had a lot of money. People without money would look at people that were rich and people that were famous and would say, they're kind of like the gods. The gods are the only ones that experience makarios, but these rich people kind of have it too. And so often, poor people would look at the rich and say, you've achieved makarios. You have happiness because you have wealth. And Jesus takes this word makarios and he flips the script on it. He's literally saying, hey, listen, you don't have to be a god to achieve happiness. You don't have to be rich and famous to achieve happiness. The that literally happiness is coming in your presence. And I'm going to give you the secret to how to have happiness. But you have to put into practice the words that I'm about to tell you. So what are the words that we have to put into practice? In order to get there, we need to rewind. We just read the end of this where Jesus said, hey, if you do this, you'll be happy. What is the this? We're going to rewind and go all the way up to John 13, verse 1. It's going to come on the screen so you can follow along in YouVersion. This is the scenario of why Jesus said what he said. He says, it was just before the Passover festival. And I want to stop there for a second. The Passover festival is not something that we celebrate today. It is a Jewish festival, and it's specifically around God's deliverance of his people out of slavery. And every year they were to celebrate this Passover as a remembrance to them of how God delivers his people. Well, today, if you're a Christian, we don't celebrate Passover, but we have some celebrations that are similar to it. You just experienced one with communion. Communion is representing and remembering how God has delivered us from slavery. The slavery of sin, God has delivered us from it. He's taken us out of the dark and brought us into the light. And so when we take communion, it is a very similar idea to this Passover festival. When the Jewish culture, they would have a festival, it would be a big party and a big feast, and a big part of it was the Passover meal. And Jesus, because he was Jewish, got his 12 disciples together, they rented a room, and they went up into the room, and they had this Passover festival. It's a very proper festival. There's certain things that they have to do in order to check off all the boxes to say we've celebrated it the right way, and there's all these things. There's certain food they have to eat. There's certain behaviors they have to do. There's all these things around this Passover festival, and it says it was just before the Passover festival. Jesus knew the hour had come for him to leave this world and go to the Father. Having loved his own who were in the world, he loved them to the end. Now let's just stop there for a second. We know how this ends. This whole thing ends with Jesus saying, if you put it into practice, then you will be truly happy. Did you catch what's going on? Celebrating this Passover festival, Jesus knows in just a few hours, he's about to be betrayed, tortured, and crucified. And yet Jesus is able to say, I'm still truly happy. Put yourself in this situation just for a second. If you knew in the next few hours your life was going to turn drastically, would you worry about that, or would you be able to still be happy? So often in our lives, our happiness is based off our circumstances or what is done to us, and Jesus is saying, I'm about to unlock something to you that is so much deeper than your experiences. It is true happiness. It's a happiness that doesn't leave when things don't go your way. And Jesus is able to literally say, guys, I have this happiness despite the fact that I know I'm about to be tortured and killed on a bloody cross. He goes on to say, it says, the evening meal was in progress. And the devil had already prompted Judas, the son of Simon Iscariot, to betray Jesus. Jesus knew that the Father had put all things under his power and that he had come from God and was returning to God. And so the meal was in progress, and the author of this gives us some great hindsight. The author of this says that one of the disciples that was at this festival meal, this Passover meal, was Judas. And Judas was going to betray Jesus. Now Jesus, because he was God, he could predict the future, he knew the future, he could see into people's hearts. Jesus knew that Judas was going to betray him, and yet it didn't change Jesus' happiness. Can you imagine having a meal with someone that you knew in a few moments was going to betray you? Can you imagine treating someone with respect and honor knowing that they didn't really like you? You see, so often in our world, our happiness is based off a bartering system. And our happiness is, if you're nice to me, then I'll be nice to you, and then we can both be happy. But the second you're not nice to me, then I get to be mean to you. And if you made me unhappy, then I'm going to make you unhappy. And Jesus is flipping the script and saying, hey guys, I'm giving you something that is not natural. It is supernatural. It's not based off the way people treat you. I want to give you something that you can actually remain happy even when people don't treat you the way that you deserve. Your happiness cannot be based on what other people do for you, or you will constantly be on this emotional roller coaster of, oh, if they meet my needs, then I'm happy. But if they don't meet my needs, then, oh, my world is crushed. But that is so much pressure to put on other people. The weight of trying to keep you happy is impossible. There's no way that someone can meet every single one of your needs. There's no way that someone can know what you're thinking at all times. There's no way that someone can say, hey, I'm just going to do everything the way that you would do it so that you will remain happy. That is an impossible task, and yet we put that on the relationships in our life. We constantly expect people to meet our every need and to be there for us and to respond the way that we want them to respond and to do what we want them to do. And if they don't, we become unhappy. And Jesus is literally saying, guys, I'm still happy even though the guy that's sitting across from me is about to betray me. This is a supernatural happiness. This is something that is so much different than what we've experienced. Let's keep reading in John 13:4-5. It says, so he got up from the meal. This is Jesus, got up from the meal, took off his outer clothing, and wrapped a towel around his waist. After that, he poured water into the basin and began to wash his disciples' feet, drying them with a towel that was wrapped around him. Okay. None of you just gasped or like were in shock. So like maybe the coffee hasn't kicked in, or maybe you don't understand just how scandalous this is. This party, this festival, this meal just got lit. This is crazy what has just happened here. Just put yourself in this context for a second. If you're used to a religious Jewish festival where everything is proper and everything has a certain time and place, Jesus literally breaks the tradition and does something that is not just kind of shocking, it is scandalous. And in order to get you to understand just how scandalous this is, I want to put it into a story form. Just imagine for a second that you're at this proper festival, at a church-type festival, at a potluck, where everyone's on their best behavior and everyone's dressed the right way and everyone's acting very churchy. That's the scene here. And Jesus, with his 12 closest followers, he says, guys, I'm going to take a break from this meal, and I'm going to go over here to the stereo, and I'm going to play us a song. And his disciples are like, what's a stereo? And Jesus is like, don't worry about it. It's from the future, but I need to do this in order to make a point. And Jesus puts his play on the stereo, and all of a sudden music starts coming on, and it's a song from 2002. A song from Nelly. And out of the speakers, the disciples hear, it's getting hot in here. So take off all your clothes. I am getting so hot, I'm going to take my clothes off. Scandalous. Now, obviously that didn't happen. Jesus didn't have a stereo. But that is what you just thought. If any of you were offended by that, that's the mindset of the disciples. Literally in the midst of this religious festival, Jesus stands up and takes off his clothing. A rabbi is a person of high authority. A rabbi is someone who has honor. A rabbi is someone that people try to be because you get certain privileges with being a rabbi. And here the rabbi is unrobing and taking off his clothes. This is scandalous. All the disciples would have stopped eating and said, what is this guy up to? Why is he doing that? And then it says that Jesus went and got some water and he filled it and he started bringing it to the disciples. Let's keep reading and see what happens next. In John 13:5, it says, after that, he poured water into a basin and began to wash his disciples' feet, drying them with the towel that was wrapped around him. So Jesus is shirtless, he has a towel around him, and he washes the disciples' feet. Now, again, this is incredibly scandalous. In order to understand just how scandalous this is, you need to understand their culture. In their day and age, they didn't have paved roads, and they didn't have Nikes, they didn't have tennis shoes, they wore sandals. And not only did they not have paved roads, but most of the transportation, if they didn't walk, it would have been animals. And animals would use the bathroom on the very roads that they would walk on. So it was incredibly dirty, incredibly dusty, and feet were disgusting. And in their day and age, the Jewish culture viewed cleanliness as being close to godliness. And they had certain rituals that before they ate, they would need to wash their hands and they would need to be clean. And it was signifying washing off the world, washing off sin, washing off dirt. And it was very disrespectful to not clean yourself before you eat. And so when a Jewish person would walk into a house, the servant of the house would come and would wash their feet. Now, feet were considered disgusting. It was gross. But because it was a servant, you didn't mind. And isn't that the same mindset that we have? I know we don't have servants today, but there's some certain thoughts in our head that we say, people of honor, we don't let them serve us, but people that we kind of think are kind of lower, they can serve us. And the disciples didn't ask a servant's name. They didn't want to get to know the servant. The servant was there to take care of their needs. And the servant was there to clean the most dirty and disgusting parts of their body, their feet. Now, in Jesus' day and age, because you had disciples, if you were to walk into a home or into a hotel room like this, and there was no servant there, the way that your feet got washed was the lowest of the disciples, the least of these, would have to take on the responsibility of a servant, of a slave, and he would have to wash everyone's feet. Now, if you understand this, it makes a lot of sense when you read throughout the New Testament. Jesus' disciples are constantly fighting with each other about which one is the greatest. Well, why? Because if you're the lowest, it comes with some responsibility. If you're the highest, you're like the rabbi. You don't have to do these dirty, like, jobs. But if you're the lowest, you got picked last for dodgeball. Like, you're barely on the team. Like, you're here, and we're just going to treat you kind of like scum. Like, it's good enough that you're here. And so the lowest of the disciples had the responsibility to wash everyone's feet if the servant wasn't there. Now, Jesus is not a servant, and he's the rabbi who deserves to be served, and yet he pours water into a bowl, and he goes and he starts to wash the disciples' feet. This is offensive. This is something that they would say, no, like, you're not at a place to wash my feet. And if you think about it this way, when there's someone that you view as being a high position, if there's someone you view as having honor, you would never put on them this task to do something so low. It would literally make you feel uncomfortable. No, you're not supposed to do this. I'm okay with people lesser than me doing this, but I'm not okay with you. You don't deserve to mess with my feet. You don't deserve to see this dirt. It would make the disciples feel really uncomfortable, and that makes sense why what happens next. Keep reading with me. Jesus came to Simon Peter, who said to him, Lord, are you going to wash my feet? Jesus replied, you do not realize now what I'm doing, but later you will understand. No, said Peter, you shall never wash my feet. Jesus answered, unless I wash you, you have no part with me. Then, Lord, Simon Peter replied, not just my feet, but my hands and my head as well. Do you understand the context of this? That literally Peter is saying, I can't have you wash my feet because they're dirty. And the only people that get to be involved with my dirt are people that are less than. I'm too prideful to allow you to mess with the dirt on my feet. And ultimately, Peter had some selfishness because Peter wanted to be a rabbi. He was following Jesus, who was a rabbi, and rabbis came with authority. Rabbis came with position, and you got to do what the rabbi did. And Peter's sitting there watching his rabbi wash his feet, and he's like, no, this is not the way it goes. If I become a rabbi, people serve me. I don't serve them. What are you doing, Jesus? No! You get out of here. Can you imagine telling Jesus no? I am convinced that every single one of us deeply and desperately desire to be loved, but we're not very good at actually allowing people to love us. In order to be loved, you have to let someone into the deepest, darkest, dirtiest places of your life. And often in our lives, we think, in order to be loved, I've got to perform, I've got to be good, I've got to only show them the good sides. And when someone gets close to us, we want to hide the bad stuff. Never in your relationships, when you mess up, do you think, let me go confess that to my spouse, let me go confess that to my kids. We think when we mess up, I've got to hide that, because they won't accept me if they get to the dirt. They won't accept me if they see just how broken I am. But when you live with someone in family, they experience your brokenness. And you might try to hide it from them, but they get to see it full on. And we are never going to achieve happiness unless we are vulnerable enough to allow Jesus to serve us. So I want to ask you two questions, and I want you to think about these. In fact, I would encourage you to write them down and think about them this week. This is not something that you just skim over or you skip over really quickly. Here are two questions for you. Have you ever let Jesus truly love you? I'm not talking about, have you ever raised your hand in a church service? Have you ever walked down an aisle? Have you ever said, I believe in Jesus? That's not what I'm asking. Have you ever allowed Jesus to truly love you? In order to allow Jesus to truly love you, you got to allow him to wash your dirty, stinky feet. In order to allow Jesus to love you, you got to be vulnerable to admit, I need you. On my own, I'm broken. On my own, I'm selfish. On my own, I will screw up my life. I need you. In order to allow Jesus to love you, you've got to be vulnerable. And that's scary. That's hard. We want to pretend like we're perfect, but you will never receive the benefits of a Savior unless you admit that you need saving. And Peter wanted to push Jesus away. God, I love you. Jesus, I love you, but I'm not going to let you serve me. It's too vulnerable. It's too hard. Have you ever allowed Jesus to love you? Have you ever allowed Jesus to serve you? I wonder how your relationships and how my relationships would change if we started there. You see, where we start with relationships is we start with someone making us happy, and we think if they perform, if they act a certain way, if they do something for us, then I will be happy. But Jesus is flipping the script, and he's literally saying that your happiness is not dependent on what other people do. Jesus is in a room with a bunch of people that are going to deny that they even know him in a few minutes. And Jesus is not saying, hey, listen, you can be happy based off your circumstances, because literally in the next few hours, Jesus is about to be tortured and killed. Jesus is saying, I'm giving you the secret to happiness, and it's not contingent on what other people do or what your circumstances. It's so much deeper than that. Your happiness is not dependent on other people. It can't be, because you'll constantly be chasing happiness as long as you base it on someone else. Let's keep reading our text. It closes out this section. John 13, 12 through 17 says, when he had finished, that's Jesus, when he had finished washing their feet, he put on his clothes and returned to his place. Do you understand what I've done for you? He asked them. You call me teacher and Lord, and rightly so, for this is what I am. Now that I, your Lord and teacher, have washed your feet, you also should wash one another's feet. I've set you an example that you should do as I've done for you. Very truly, I tell you, no servant is greater than his master, nor is the messenger greater than the one who sent him. Now that you know these things, you will be blessed. You will be very happy. You will be truly happy if you do them. Did you catch what Jesus just said? Jesus didn't say that you'll be happy when everyone meets all your needs. Jesus didn't say you'll be happy when circumstances go your way. Jesus said you will be happy when you learn to serve people. The average marriage ends in divorce within the first 7 years. The honeymoon period for a relationship lasts, based on statistics, only about 3 years. And what happens in relationships is when a relationship is new, everyone's on their best behavior and everyone tries to serve. And a new relationship, we want to win people over, so we go above and beyond to try to meet their needs. But after about 3.5 years, a human being gets comfortable with another human. And instead of trying to meet their needs, we start to take them for granted. Literally, this is what happens in all human beings, in all relationships. And after that honeymoon period ends, our real true selves come out. Everything up until that point has been pretending, has been on our best behavior. But after, on average, 3.5 years, the true self comes out. And so it's no wonder why the average marriage ends in 7 years. Because after 3.5 years, the real person comes out. And when you live with someone real, they're not always meeting your needs. And they don't bow down to everything that you want. And they don't serve you all the time. And it's difficult. And sometimes they do disgusting things like pick their nose. And sometimes you hear them pass gas. And sometimes they want to watch shows that you find are just stupid. And you only have one TV in the TV room. So you're like, I have to put up with it. Why do you like this show? It's so dumb. And sometimes people want to eat at a restaurant that you don't like to eat at. And sometimes you make a great meal in hopes that they will give you the words that you're looking for. And you say, oh, I made this for you. And they're like, yeah, it's not my favorite. When it comes to our family, what we constantly do is we're constantly chasing after other people to make us happy. But no human being can constantly make you happy. Happiness comes not from chasing them and having them meet every one of your needs. Happiness comes when you view them as someone that you can serve. How different would your relationships be if instead of just waiting for someone to make you happy, you viewed them as someone that you could truly make happy? How different would your relationships be if you said to yourself, I'm going to find my happiness in Jesus, and so even if they don't respond the way that I want them to be, it's not going to ruin my day? How different would your relationship with your kids be if you said to yourself, hey, mom and dad are happy, and if you want to act like a little turd, you can do that, but that's not going to change our happiness. You can disobey, you can go crazy, but we're not going to allow your mood swing to change what we're doing today or our moods, because we found our happiness in something other than you. How different would your relationships be? How different would your relationships be if instead of expecting people to meet every single one of your needs, you found happiness in Jesus? I'm convinced that it would radically change things. And if you want to wait for others to make you happy, you'll become dissatisfied with your relationships. It's why the honeymoon period ends. Because it starts off great because they're meeting our needs, but after 3.5 years, they no longer are taking our every need and trying to win us over, and we become dissatisfied. And if you constantly are waiting for them to satisfy your needs and to meet every longing, you're going to constantly be dissatisfied. And here's the temptation when it comes to relationships. When a relationship gets past the honeymoon period, you'll think to yourself, well, they're no longer making me happy. I think this person will. And you'll chase and go after another relationship and say, oh, this is new. This makes me happy for a season. But then after about 3.5 years, they'll no longer make you happy. And so what are you going to say to yourself? Well, they're not making me happy. Let me leave them and chase this person because I'll find happiness in this person. But I'm telling you, if you try to find happiness in a person, you're going to be chasing it for the rest of your life. Happiness comes not from what other people can do for you, but it comes from what Jesus has already done for you. And when you take that, yeah. When you take what Jesus has done for you and you literally view every one of your relationships as an opportunity to serve, it changes how you respond to your family. So here's the big idea once again. We view happiness as something others give us, but true happiness is not something you can take. It's something you make. When it comes to art, there's something that they say to artists that if you sit with a blank canvas and you wait for life to inspire you, that canvas will remain blank. But if you want to create a masterpiece, then you have to just sit down and say, I'm just going to paint. I'm going to create inspiration. I'm going to create something. I'm going to make the art, not dependent on what other things happen to me, not dependent on my circumstances, not dependent on inspiration. I'm just going to make art. And I think our relationships are there for us to make art with. So often we sit around and we wait, well, I'm not inspired because you're not loving me. I don't feel like loving you because you're not treating me right. Or I don't feel like meeting your needs because you're not meeting my needs. But every person in your life is art. And you don't wait for them to treat you a certain way for you to bring happiness to the table. You create art together. I'm going to serve you because God has served me. So the big idea is simply this. We view happiness as something others give us, but true happiness is not something you can take. It's something you make. If you look for your happiness from your family, you'll constantly be disappointed. I want to make sure that you get this. Your happiness is not your family's responsibility. It's yours. If you're not happy, it's not your spouse's responsibility. If you're not happy, it's not your kid's responsibility. It is your responsibility. It's yours. And when you start to create art with your family, it radically changes the way that you view your circumstances. Radically. For the first few years of marriage, I would constantly base my happiness on the way that Monica, my wife, would treat me. And when she would give me the words of affirmation that I so longed for, I would feel happy. And when she wouldn't, I would feel down and like, what's wrong with her? And you ever notice how oftentimes in relationships it's easy to point the finger and say, well, they're the problem. And very rarely do you ever say, well, you know what? I haven't done anything to meet her needs. Maybe she's not giving me the words of affirmation because I haven't taken on her date in months. And maybe she's not giving me words of affirmation because I haven't romanced her, because I've been so consumed with my life and doing what I want. Maybe the problem is not her. Maybe the problem is me. And in your relationships, as long as you're looking for someone else to meet your happiness, you're going to constantly point out their flaws and say, well, because you do that, I'm not happy. They're not responsible for your happiness. You are. And you'll never find happiness in another human being as long as you're waiting for them to meet every single one of your needs. It's impossible to do. So stop looking for other people to make you happy and find your happiness in allowing Jesus to serve you. I want to close by giving you today's win. The win is simply this. Choose to make your relationships happy by changing your perspective of family. Your family's not there to make you happy, but for you to create happiness with. Choose to make your relationships happy by changing your perspective of family. Your family is not there to make you happy, but for you to create happiness with. This week, if your kids are not behaving, if they're having a bad attitude, have you been proactive and said, hey, maybe something's going on. What can I do to help bring happiness into this situation? Maybe they're nervous because school has just started, or maybe they're feeling stressed, or maybe there's something else going on in their life. And this week, when your spouse frustrates you because they didn't meet your needs and they didn't respond the way that you wanted to, what if instead of saying, you know what, they're just so selfish and they're just so messed up and if they would just do better, then I would be happy. What if instead of that, you said to yourself, you know what, I'm gonna reflect Jesus to them no matter what they do to me. How different would your friendships be if instead of saying, you know what, they don't ever call me, they don't ever ask me to do something, so I'm just going to get mad at them. They're not meeting my needs. What if instead of waiting for them to call, you picked up the phone and said, you know what, I'm going to be a good friend. I'm going to serve you. What would happen instead of just looking at your week and letting your week come to you, you were proactive and you went at your week and said, I'm going to create some happiness. I'm going to do something together as a family. What makes us happy together? Let's be proactive and let's figure that out. How can I serve my wife? How can you serve your husband? How can I serve my kids? How can I bring happiness to our family? This isn't something that we wait to come to us. It's something that we create. So I want to close by praying. And if you feel like God's tugged on your heart, if you feel like God said something to you, I would just invite you to pray this prayer quietly. You don't have to say it out loud. This isn't a raise your hand type moment. It's simply something you can talk to God in the quietness of your own soul. Feel like God is leading you and saying something to you today about your relationships, would you just repeat quietly after me with every eye closed and every head bowed? God, forgive me for consuming relationships. Forgive me for focusing on what others don't do for me. God, it's scary to let you truly love me. I know you want to love every part of my life. Even the messy, dirty spots. God, help me to come out of hiding to let you serve me. Forgive me so I can truly learn to serve others. In Jesus' name, amen. May we be a people that allows Jesus into the mess of our lives. May we believe that He can handle our mess. May we receive the love of God that then will allow us to truly love other people. May we stop basing our happiness on the way other people treat us, and may we learn to serve others. And may we do this so we can show the world just how good God is. Thank you guys so much for being here. We're so honored that you're here today. We'd love to see you next week for part 3 of our series.
We hope you've enjoyed and learned from today's podcast. If you'd like to connect with us further, you can check out our website at nextlevelchurch.net or find us on Facebook or Twitter.